A few years ago, a friend of mine sent me an inspiring poem via email. I guess he thought I needed to be inspired. It's called Just Checking In Today. A new Monsignor passing through his church in the middle of the day decided to pause by the altar to see who came to pray. Just then, the back door opened and a man came down the aisle. The Monsignor frowned as he saw the men who hadn't shaved in quite a while. His shirt was torn and shabby and his coat was worn and frayed. The man knelt down and bowed his head, then rose and walked away. In the days that followed, at precisely noon, the Monsignor saw this chap. Each time he knelt for just a moment, a lunch pail in his lap. Well, the Monsignor's suspicions grew, with robbery his main fear. He decided to stop and ask the man, what are you doing here? The old man said he was a factory worker and lunch was half an hour. Lunchtime was his prayer time for finding strength and power. I only stay a moment, he said, because the factory's far away. As I kneel here talking to the Lord, this is kinda what I say. I just came by to tell you, Lord, how happy I have been since we found each other's friendship and you took away my sin. Don't know much of how to pray, but I think about you every day. So Jesus, this is Ben. Just checking in today. The Monsignor, feeling foolish, told Ben that it was fine. He told the man that he was welcome to pray there anytime. It's time to go, and thanks, Ben said as he hurried out the door. Then the Monsignor knelt there at the altar, which he'd kind of never done before. His cold heart melted, warmed with love as he met with Jesus there. And the tears flowed down his cheeks as he repeated old Ben's prayer. I just came by to tell you, Lord, how happy I have been since we found each other's friendship and you took away my sin. I don't know much of how to pray, but I think about you every day. So Jesus, this is me, just checking in today. We'll come back to Ben and the Monsignor in a moment, but first we'll take a tour through the readings. You know, my guess is you've been coming here often enough over the course of your years that you know by now that the Old Testament is always chosen to set up the gospel reading. And so it is that we hear that happen today. That reading from Sirach about the prayers that pierce the clouds are designed to help illustrate that parable of Jesus about the Pharisee and the tax collector. But let's run it backwards today. Here's the question. What does the parable tell us about those prayers that pierce the clouds? And how might you and I learn to pray more that way? Here's how I'd like to begin. You know the cartoon Peanuts, right? You know, with Snoopy and Charlie Brown and Lucy and Linus and Schroeder and all the rest, you know? I just have to explain that because at school when I do that, the kids look at me like, huh, what? Oh yeah, the Charlie Brown Christmas thing, you know, we got that one, you know? Anyway, years ago, like when I was in college years ago, there was this wonderful cartoon that I remember vividly to this day. There was Snoopy running through panel after panel after panel, and he was sweating and looking good and all that kind of stuff, feeling buff, I suppose. And at the end of it, Snoopy concluded, well, there you go. The secret of life, it's looking good from a distance. Now, the fact that I remember that from when I was in college, folks, that tells you a whole lot about me. Part of us, part of me at least, is just exactly like Snoopy. We know the answers. You can trust us. I've got it together. I kind of have done a whole lot of the course of my life, you know. We're successful, we're kind, we're competent, we're good people. We're admired for what we do. We're looked up to for all that we've accomplished. Maybe not as much as we should be, but you know, it's generally often enough. Just like Snoopy, run, 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 run. You and I look good from a distance. But then there's the up close part, right? And we wouldn't worry about the up-close part if we didn't think so much about looking good from a distance, you know? That part where we see ourselves as we are. As we look at our own eyes in a mirror, for example, and try to hold our own gaze, stare deeply into those pupils staring back out at the mirror at us. Up close, in our skin, living in our shoes, we know it's quite a different story. We're held together by duct tape and rubber bands and twisty ties and all the rest of that stuff. Because we've got our questions, and we've got our doubts, we've got our anxieties, and we've got our fears. We feel small and weak and overwhelmed and powerless and clueless more often than we want to admit to. We wonder to ourselves, how could I possibly have made that mistake again? How could I possibly have done that to that person again? How could I possibly have said that cruel, hurtful thing to that person all over again? You and I fail to learn from past mistakes, and not just once, we fail to learn from them over and over and over again. It's as if we can't stop ourselves from that. We think by now that surely we should have gotten our act together. Surely we should have overcome our weaknesses and our shortcomings. But we haven't, because we probably can't. Not ever. Not ever. The message of the gospel, which points back to Sirach, I think, is that the most important prayers of our lives, the most important prayers of our lives, the ones that pierce the clouds, that get God's attention, those prayers come from the weakest, most confused, most messed up, most least together parts of our lives. What would it be like to pray out of that stuff, do you suppose? To pray like the tax collector prays, or to pray like Ben? To pray out of our weaknesses and our rough edges, our raw nerves. To pray from what feels like failure or worse. To pray out of all the answers we don't have. To pray out of the things we can't do and never will, or that we always do and can't seem to stop ourselves from doing. To pray from what we don't have, or feel frustrated by, or have lost. Or think about it this way. Suppose you could make a fist, you know? Make a fist. Just to show God how ticked off you are about this or that or the other situation in your life or in the world. And you could shake that fist at God, the better to show him how deeply you feel about it and how wrong he is to have left you feeling that way. Suppose you could do that. What kind of screaming, raging, but honest prayer would come out of your heart then? Or suppose you could take that hand and open it up to God, the better to show him just how empty you feel way too often. Just nothing there. What kind of end of the road or end of your rope prayer might that be? And wouldn't that be a good prayer to pray? Or suppose you could put into words the secret that you most want to keep away from the world. You know, your darkest doubt, your heaviest cross, your deepest disappointment or your greatest fear, your worst nightmare, the thing you can barely tell to yourself, let alone to tell to others. What would it be like to take that broken, wounded thing and cradle it in your own hands and set it flying up to God like the prayer that in point of fact it already is? You know, the real tragedy of the Pharisees' prayer, it seems to me, and why it is no prayer at all, is that it makes no room for God. It's a prayer of someone who's just fine, thank you very much, exactly where he is, stay out of his way. And therefore, God can't do what God longs to do, which is to accompany, to heal, to redeem, to love. Unlike the tax collector, unlike the tax collector. Can't you almost see God bend down low over that poor man and kind of put his hand under his chin and raise his head up, the better to look him in the eye and say to him something like, "Yeah, I know, you're right. It's hard, isn't it? Things aren't the way they should be. We aren't the way we should be. But I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If you hang in there, I'll hang in there with you. If you don't run scared, if you don't stop trying, if you don't give up, I guarantee that I'll be right there in the middle with you, by your side, and nothing will ever make me leave you. What do you say? Do we have ourselves a deal? Do we?" Past noon one day, the Monsignor noticed that old Ben hadn't come. As more days passed and still no Ben, he began to worry some. At the factory, he asked about him, and learning he was ill, the hospital staff was worried too, but he'd given them a thrill. The week that Ben was with them brought changes to the ward. His smiles and joy contagious. Changed people were his reward. The head nurse couldn't understand why Ben could be so glad when no flowers, calls, or cards came. Not a single visitor he had. The Monsignor stayed by his bed. He voiced the nurse's concern. No friends had come to show they cared. You have nowhere to turn. Looking surprised, old Ben spoke up, and with a winsome smile, "The nurse is wrong. She couldn't know. He's been here all the while. Every day at noon he comes, a dear friend of mine, you see. He sits right down and takes my hand, leans over and says to me, 'I just came by to tell you, Ben, how happy I have been since we found ourselves this friendship, since I took away your sin. And I think about you always, and I love to hear you pray. And so, Ben, this is Jesus just checking in today.'"